We Scots have always recognised a slightly chippy, whiz-like-us element in our character. We may have been smaller, but we were bonny fechters. In the independence debate, has that morphed into we're intrinsically nicer, more caring, basically less Thatcherite, different from the cutthroat, deal-tuck the hindmost types south of the border? Well, certainly Times columnist David Aronovich thinks that some pro-independence writers are indulging in that. He calls it othering. David's on the line now, as is Leslie Riddick, one of those he thinks does it. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Hello.
And David, I was fascinated to see that you two have some history.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I remember Leslie from when she was the president of the Oxford University Student Union, and I think she made quite an impression upon me then. She's a very talented writer, in my opinion, and broadcaster.
Yeah, and indulging in this business of othering, you think? Separating Scots from everybody else?
Well, I mean, like a lot of us, Leslie has her subtle and her less subtle moments. But by and large, I think that is what creeps through her writing. I mean, the piece that gave me the most cause for disturbance about this was a piece that she wrote in The Scotsman last October, which went under the heading, she didn't write that, "Different Standards Apply Here." And what it essentially said was that Scots are different to the English. And to give you just a kind of little flavour of it, so that we don't talk completely in the abstract, she's talking about why it won't make any difference to Scotland if there's a Labour government. And she says, in any case, what kind of Labour government will get elected by an English electorate that largely backs performance-related pay, UKIP, Trident, privatisation and cutting benefits? So what I did was I went back to whatever we can tell from the relevant polling about the differences in attitudes between Scots and the rest of the UK on some of these issues. And what you discover is that there isn't actually very much difference. I looked at, for instance, the attitudes towards welfare benefits and to some of the other questions there. And let's just say about UKIP, that current polls put UKIP in the UK at about 10%, which is probably their kind of high point. So to suggest that the English electorate largely backs UKIP, I think, is something that Leslie can use this opportunity to resile from, whilst noting the reason why she felt it necessary to include it within the list, this kind of categorisation of what the English were. So, and to make this point even more quickly, when you actually dig down into the polling evidence, what you find is that there's more difference between the English regions on some of these questions than there is between the UK and Scotland. And on quite a lot of them, there's more difference between men and women quite often than there is between Scots and the rest of the UK. In other words, we are really, apart from our electoral politics, which is the very big distinction, we're really not very different at all.
Leslie, you've been very quiet, uncharacteristically quiet during all that. But you can see the accusation, can't you? There's one specific accusation he's asking you to resile from, and that is about UKIP. But there's also this basic accusation that you are trying to create a difference where none exists.
OK, well, let's take the UKIP thing for starters. Do you happen to know what the average UKIP result is in Scotland, Dave?
I think I do. From you're talking about from the point of view of council by-elections
and so on. It's quite easy. They've lost every deposit in every election they've stood in councils, in the recent by-elections we've had. It's been the same result.
Although in the recent by-election they came ahead of the Liberal Democrats.
Yes, and where was that? 5%.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, you can say, well, 5%, 13%. What's a few percent between friends? But these are just the kind of distinctions that are enough to create a different sort of society. I'd like to move on from that to, you know, the wider question that we're talking about here. What I was writing about in that column and in many is, to my perceptions, the problems that face England with a government that seems intent on expanding a market economy into a market society. Now, since the bulk of people in England voted for Conservatives in large numbers, unlike Scots and the Lib Dems, they're largely getting what they voted for. The result, in many respects, I think, is evidence of difficulties arising around mistrust, suspicion and competition run riot that all comes from that kind of society. Personally speaking, that's why I don't want it. Now, if English voters want it, That's fine. The trouble is, because there is no English Parliament, but there is a British one, and because the two are so easily conflated, especially when you happen to be sitting in the epicentre of both, we end up with a situation where the Scots get what they didn't vote for, or at least we're looking across the border at systems we would not want to have in a month of Sundays. And that is, for example, three-star hospitals. Because Scots don't actually live in England, they're not probably aware of the different way the health service has developed. We probably are aware that there is a system of, there is opt-out schools, and there have been since Margaret Thatcher. There was one opt-out school for about 3 years in Scotland during that time. It then went back into the state sector. We don't have free schools. We don't have academies. If we had independence, we'd renationalise the Royal Mail. And I think most people would say amen to that.
But what about David's point that actually opinion polls show there's not much difference in what people actually think on these subjects? There may be differences in the way that Scotland approaches them from a sort of administrative point of view or a political point of view. But there's no real difference in what people think.
Well, there is. We could sit here and toss back and forwards different opinion polls that give you different snapshots of opinion on the EU, which at the last time I looked had an opinion poll of about 54% of people being positive in Scotland about EU membership, with around 40% less than that, I think, in England. So, you know, we can sit and discuss those. You might think those are smallish gaps. In statistical terms, they are significant, and they build into a larger feeling for what it is to run a country. Now, the Scots have got national characteristics, and this is an important point. The United Kingdom is a state. It's not a nation. There are four nations that make up that state. And because institutions in Scotland remained intact after the Union, we have very many different ways of doing things. And that's what amounts to a different outlook.
OK, David Aronovich, it's a different outlook, and there's nothing wrong with that. Your idea of othering seems to come from this whole idea. Is it fair to say that you see that as the start of the sort of hate campaign that leads to things like anti-Semitism, leads to the Holocaust?
No.
You've used that phrase in those sort of arguments before.
No, not at all. I mean, I think this has got absolutely nothing to do with race, and I don't accuse anybody not anybody that I'm aware of, who's in favour of a yes vote at the independence referendum of racism. I'm just simply not aware of it, and that's not where this goes. What this is a kind of political othering, in which Leslie's just given us a very good example of. I can tell you, Leslie, Scots in England will not recognise your characterisation of English schools or English hospitals. You'd think, from the way you talked, as if you'd have an entirely and completely different experience on one side of the border or the other.
But we do.
No, but you really don't. And I speak as somebody who knows and so on.
Do you know, in that case, David, the opt-out school, the free school or the academy in Scotland that I don't know?
No, hold on. The actual formation of the school structure in that way, who actually runs the school in that kind of way, is not that important when you come to
it
look
to
at
us.
How... No, hold on. Well, it may be to you, but we're trying to have a discussion here about what it would actually mean to people who had their children at the school or who are patients at the hospital, whether or not you would go in and think, ah, you know what, this could only be a Scottish school because it's so different from the English school, which is just over the border. That just isn't the case. And one of the reasons why, as you say in your own book, why the English minority in Scotland integrate very, very easily, and one of the reasons why I've never heard of Scots having difficulty integrating in England and so on, is because the situations are so similar within the context of devolution and within the context of the historic distinction that Scotland kept within its legal system and to an extent within its education system. And you begin to kind of construct a notion that somehow or other we're sort of, I don't know, it's almost like kind of Congo Brazzaville to your Norway sometimes in the way you kind of discuss this. And it's absurd and it isn't true. But I think also your attempt to squeeze out from underneath the point about UKIP was very interesting and from the point of view of the argument. You said, I'll go back to it, that actually the English electorate largely backs UKIP. And then you admit that the figure for the biggest opinion poll is 13%. The English electorate doesn't largely back UKIP at all. But one of the things that is absolutely distinct about Scotland and the United Kingdom is we don't have a Scottish National Party. That is absolutely true. And that means that we have a different electoral politics. So somehow or other, That section of the centre-right and centre, which exists in the rest of the United Kingdom, finds its expression somewhere else in the Scottish system than through a Conservative Party.
Right. Just let's pick up the point you made about education. There is whopping difference between, and traditionally has been, between the two systems. And perhaps as the one in this conversation who's experienced all of them, I can tell you about that. The Scottish system is based on the notions of Patrick Geddes, which favours the kind of what we call the lad of Perts. That is the idea of someone who has got a breadth of knowledge. And that favoured, for example, a system of five hires, which keeps a child, if you like, broad across a number of subjects. And it favours a university system where you get a general degree, not a specific one. Now, as you mentioned, I went to Oxford. I ended up with a degree in specifically politics, philosophy and economics, though very little of the latter. If I'd been in Scotland, I would have had a general arts degree. Now, those, again, you may think are mere nothings. Actually, they underpin outlooks of education. They also explain why the Scots have moved further now into the curriculum for excellence, which means there will be no external examinations before the age of 16. By contrast, the English system is moving in precisely the opposite direction. In the words of Pasi Salber, a Finn, who describes the world's best educational system, which is the Finnish one, he talks about the English system currently testing children to destruction, having no faith in teachers, and effectively introducing competitiveness so early and so thoroughly into education. Now, to me, David, if I could finish, those represent differences that are as strong as any differences that exist between countries.
At that point, I'm afraid we are going to have to leave it. But thank you both very much, Leslie Riddick and David Aronovich.